Hello, Tech fans, and welcome into episode 174 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, originating from TSL's High Tech Studios in the Virginia Tech Corporate Research Center. On today's show, Tech Sideline was able to attend Virginia Tech football's practice last week, got to tour the new weight room, the new Student Athlete Performance Center, and we are going to discuss the day that Will and Chris had getting to watch practice and see all the renovations that have been made over by the Merriman Center and more. Looking forward to that conversation. Plus, we continue to preview position groups heading in to the 2021 college football season for Virginia Tech. We will preview wide receivers and tight ends on the show today. Plus, a little bit of baseball and softball talk. All that and more coming up on episode 174 of the Tech Sideline Podcast that gets started right now. Whether you are watching live or archived on YouTube, listening on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Amazon Music, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or on Stitcher, we are so glad you could join us as we record on Monday morning, April the 5th, our first show in the month of April. Our crew today, as always, to my left, we have our managing editor here at TechSideline.com, Chris Coleman. Across the way, he is wearing the awesome Columbia VT shirt today. He is our founder and general manager, Will Stewart. Behind the scenes, back this week, so glad to have the best podcast producer in the land. It just does not feel complete without having the great Malcolm Stewart. He's back behind the scenes. And I'm your podcast host, Evan Hughes. Great to have you with us. Well, we have a lot of people who love to watch the show, and we appreciate that. So if you're watching, I mean, like, what are two things you could do right now?
You should like and you should subscribe. Now, everybody pause. Wait a minute. Done? Okay.
Thank you for liking and subscribing.
And comment.
Comment
really helps with the algorithms.
Yeah, that's
and things
true.
Like that.
You know,
yeah.
We appreciate actually. You do a great job too of chiming in with those that comment after the show.
Right. So comment like after the final video is archived. Yes, we appreciate comments during the show as well and questions during the show. But YouTube doesn't really, I don't think, pay attention to that. Its algorithms wait and see who comments like afterwards.
Even if you comment, your show was horrible, it still helps.
Right, comment something. We did get a downvote on last week's show, but you know, the person
you know,
did,
we talked about getting likes, and we had 100, I just looked, 134 likes.
Nice, very nice.
So I'm going to put a 150. That's our goal for this week.
Yep.
I was going to put that out there. So anyways, it's so great to have everybody with us. And if you are watching on YouTube and you are watching live, then you can chime in on the YouTube chat like Ronnie Adams is doing right now saying good morning. And Bruce Drew just randomly commented, I like sandwiches, just commented in the chat. So thank you, everybody, for chiming in. If you have a question for Will or Chris, we'll get to them
so
at the end of the
show. Chris is like super fit now. And we're talking about this last week. And Chris is like, I don't eat carbohydrates at all. I'm like, how do you not eat sandwiches? You don't eat bread?
I normally do. Like, even when I dropped from like 16% to 10%, uh-huh. I was eating bread every day in the form of like a peanut butter sandwich for lunch. Man. But I cut that out recently, over the last month.
Good for you, Chris.
So I just eat like ground turkey for lunch and stuff like that.
So I cut carbohydrates by going from eating huge bagel sandwiches to just smaller pieces of bread. That's what I do.
Our comments consist of good morning, I like sandwiches, and I like cheese right now. So we're off to a great start
cheese?
In the comment section.
Oh, yeah.
So yes, I like cheese too. So okay, let's go ahead and transition and get into it. Tech Sideline Podcast is presented by Campus Emporium, as well as the Southeast Regional Training Center. Find out how you can get involved with Virginia Tech Wrestling today by going to southeastrtc.com. Tech Sideline Podcast also presented by DraftKings, as well as Anytime Fitness. Each new member gets a free fitness consultation and a program is designed. For your first billing period, you can sign up for $1. $1, that's a great deal. Call 540-951-1340, 540-951-1340. Ask for Tyler and tell him that Tech Sideline sent you.
So we haven't talked a lot about Anytime Fitness, so let's give them a few minutes. They are getting towards the end of a 3-month sponsorship. They came in on January 15th, and they're rolling out on April 15th. So the whole idea is that I was going to go and work out with a personal trainer, which I've been doing twice a week, Mitch Ludwig, Mitchell Ludwig. But does he prefer Mitchell or Mitch? I call him Mitch.
He goes by Mitch at the gym. Right. When he played football at Tech, it was Mitchell.
It was Mitchell. That's right. What I thought. Yeah. Kind of like Mitch and Mitchell Trubisky, but, you know, except we like Mitchell Ludwig. So, you know, if you guys don't know this about Mitch, Mitch is like, he's the most muscular punter on the planet Earth. Of course, he's not a punter anymore. So I've been working out with him twice a week. And so I have in the, it's been almost 3 months now. And on the scale, I've lost 10 pounds, which for a guy my size is a big deal.
That's congratulations.
I went from 186 down to 176. I need to get down to 170 or 165, you know, probably from an overall weight standpoint. But they got a cool machine there that tells you, you know, how much muscle mass you have, how much fat weight you have, where it is, all kinds of stuff like that. So even though I've lost 10 pounds, I think I've lost at least 12 pounds of fat, probably more. So, so the one thing I wanted to talk about is if, like, I've lifted weights off and on since I was a kid, like 11 or 12 years old. My brothers taught me how to lift. And, you know, so I've been lifting for literally decades, and I never had a personal trainer. People would say, like, oh, if I didn't have a personal trainer, I wouldn't go and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, ah, that's because you're not motivated, you know. But the experience with having a personal trainer has been really interesting because I'm a pretty boring weightlifter. I just do the basic, you know, squats, bench, curls, shoulder presses. Mitch makes me do all kinds of stuff that I would not do on my own.
Mitchisms.
Mitchisms.
That's what they call them.
And he doesn't stand over you and go, come on, Will, come on. It's not like that, yeah, you yeah. know. But, yeah, he makes me do stuff I wouldn't do that is good for me. And I also, it is true that when you have a personal trainer there, you push yourself further than you otherwise would. You don't want to quit when another person's
100%.
Watching you. Although there are times where he's like, give me 12 reps. And I'm like, you're not getting 12. so get 8 or 10. But I pretty much never quit on Mitch. And the last thing I wanted to say is one of the more interesting things about this whole process is they sit down, they do an interview with you ahead of time to kind of get a feel for things. And because of the amount of experience he has, he has a knack for picking the exact right amount of weight. He doesn't pick too much. He doesn't pick too little.
Yeah, it's rare when he says, okay, get a 45 and let's do this, that I'm like, I pick it up and I'm like, ah, we need to go down to 35 or something, whatever, you know?
Yeah. I've been doing this for 3 months now, and there was one workout early on where the deadlifts he had me do at the beginning of the workout were a little bit too much. But, you know, he figured that. And there was one time fairly recently where we benched and he underestimated how much I can bench. So he's like, oh, we'll put on more. Oh, we'll put on more. You know, but for the most part, it's interesting. The people that are experienced at it have a real knack for picking just the right stuff for you to do. So that's my pitch. They're going to be on for another week or so. But you know, like I said, give it a shot. If you've always wondered about it, give it a shot.
As we say, free fitness consultation, and a program is designed
for you.
I also recommend it because, you know, you pay in advance, right? For your 6 months or a year or whatever time period you sign up for. And when you pay for it in advance, you know, from a bi-monthly perspective, it means you're not going to skip because you've already paid for it. You've signed a contract.
Yeah.
All right. That money's coming out of your bank account, whether you actually go or not. So you might as well go.
So you are going to go. And they're flexible. Like, I've had to miss a few workouts, and Mitch has always rescheduled something to make sure I get my two a week in.
Yeah.
So,
again, 540-951-1340 is the number. Ask for Tyler and tell him that Tech Sideline sent you. Again, really great to have all of you with us here. Recording on Monday morning, April the 5th. We actually are going to have more time than normal to take your questions at the end. So we already have one from Les. We'll get to that at the end of the show. If you have a question about spring practice, football positions, could be about basketball, whatever it may be, drop those in the chat. We'll get to those a little bit later. We'll talk baseball and softball later in the show, but we will spend the majority of today's podcast talking about Virginia Tech football and the experience that Will and Chris got to have last week as Virginia Tech, the football team, invited media members in to not only watch practice, but go tour the new weight room, see the new Student Athlete Performance Center. So, Will, just your overall takeaways, because there's been so many new things that have been done during the pandemic and the public has not been able to see it.
Right.
So what were your overall takeaways from your day with Virginia Tech football?
So they officially opened the expanded Merriman weight room, I think it was the first week of March. And I had snuck in there way back in November. I went over there with my camera one day, and it was the end of the day and there was nobody around. So I went inside, and now I took pictures of the weight room when it was empty before all the equipment came in, you know, and like literally when they opened it, I think it was around March 6th or so, the equipment like literally came in at the end of the week before, boom, they got it set up and they're already using it. So I'd been in there, I'd seen the space, and we had a good look at the equipment on a YouTube video that they did with Ben Hilgart. And to pimp our product, Brandon Patterson, just from the brief Hilgart video, was able to write an excellent article for us that's over on the subscriber side about all the equipment in the Merriman Center. And because Brandon knows, he knows a lot about football, but he also knows a lot about strength and conditioning. He's kind of I don't want to say guru, but he pays attention to it, you know. So it was real interesting. Brandon could look at all the equipment and break down everything that they could do. And so,
sucking Mitch, you should ask him about it.
Yeah. You know, because I don't want to, we can talk about that. I don't want to go down that path just yet. So it was cool to see the weight room. Now, the thing about the weight room tour was it was given by Pete Morris, who's director of strategic communications, because the strength and conditioning people were actually at the practice at that moment in time. So Pete's walkthrough probably wasn't quite as detailed as something that, say, Hilgert would have done if he had been there. And then we went up and saw the Student Athlete Performance Center, which I had also gone in and taken pictures before it was fully ready to go. And I was pretty impressed with that. And Chris can get into some of the stuff that we saw, but they did have a crew there, you know, working. And we talked to, I believe, Allison Onion was her name. Allison is director of nutrition for Virginia Tech Athletics. Cool last name, never seen it before. O-N-Y-O-N.
Yeah.
A softball player at Cornell, I want to say.
Cornell,
yeah, played for, and she was a good player, too.
Yeah. Pitcher.
It was, and she said, I didn't record any of this, haven't read any articles that other people have produced, but I believe she said they have 5 full-time nutritionists. They're getting ready to hire a 6th, and I think they have a 7th kind of on a part-time consulting basis. So you're sponsoring 22 sports, and you've got 6 or 7 nutritionists, so they can distribute the work. So it's not just one person handling all sports like it would have been.
10, yeah, that's 15, impossible.
20. Yeah,
that's one person handling the nutrition of 500 plus people.
Yeah,
that's impossible.
So it was cool seeing those things. And I'll let Chris throw in any thoughts he wants to.
Your biggest takeaways when the day was over. What did you walk away saying? This was the coolest thing I saw today.
Well, it's obviously, I was able to simulate in my head more what it's like to be a football player, because our schedule for the day kind of simulated what a typical day for a football player is when football practice is going on. You get to practice, you get to the indoor facility, which we did. We went to practice, and then as soon as we went to practice, we went up to, or as soon as we left practice, we went up to the Student Athlete Performance Center, which is basically what they do. They go to practice, and then they go to the Student Athlete Performance Center for a meal. And obviously, they go to the locker room and change in between. But as soon as they leave the locker room, it's just walk up the flight of stairs a couple stories, and you're there. It's very, very important to, after a 2-hour football practice, the calories you just expended get replenished as quickly as possible. Preferably with a high protein diet. And this makes it possible to do that. In fact, it's basically a requirement now, as opposed to in the past, you turn them loose after football practice and you have to depend on them.
You don't know what they're doing.
They could go back home and go to bed.
They might have class right away.
You know, you can go to Turner Place on campus and get a good meal, but if the weather's like it was this past Thursday, you really want to walk a mile across campus when the wind chill is like 23 degrees.
Well, and as Malcolm and I know real quick, if you're an athlete going to Turner, you're waiting probably about 30 to 40 minutes with all the other students to get your food, because there's no such thing as a short line.
Correct.
At Turner.
Right.
And so, and the nutritionists are not in those other.
Yeah. So Whether a player does what he needs to do right after a football practice from a nutrition standpoint, it's kind of been a crapshoot here recently. Obviously, you can tell the ones who do it right. Divine Diablo, all you have to do is look at him, and you know he does it right.
You think Wyatt Teller did it right?
I think Wyatt Teller did it right. He did not miss very many meals.
Yeah. So if you remember from last week's podcast, when we were talking to Jake about Pro Day, you asked him who the biggest winner was. You know, who advanced his case for getting drafted the most, and he said Divine Diablo. He said, first of all, you just look at the guy.
Right. Right. Yeah. So to me, that's the biggest thing is now you're not turning them loose after practice. They're just going upstairs right after practice. And you know, you can get on TSL, and we'll give a plug for our subscription article. You can subscribe to TSL, read that article, and it's got pictures of the types of food.
His Friday Q&A from the end of last week.
Was it a Friday Q&A?
Yep.
Are you sure?
No, it was Thursday.
It was my Thursday article, a day in the Virginia Tech football program.
That's right. So we went to the practice that morning. Yeah, he wrote the article that afternoon. Correct.
A morning at a Virginia Tech football practice.
That was it. And obviously, the menu changes on a day-to-day basis and everything like that, but you'll get a basic example. So I think that'll make a big difference with them. I'll keep it short as far as what I say about the weight room, but I was talking to Mitch about it on Friday during my personal training session, and he said he had watched a video of the weight room and everything like that, and the biggest thing was the old weight room, there were only two stations for lat pulldowns, right? The new weight room, there are 24 because each rack is a multi-use rack where you can bench, squat, and do all the auxiliary
all
stuff.
Things, right? Yeah.
It's bigger and it's way more efficient.
Yep.
Now, obviously, you lift in groups, like the linemen will lift together, the wide receivers and DBs will lift together, and like the linebackers and tight ends. You know, but can you imagine like trying to get the entire offensive line group through a weight room session with only two lat pull-down stations? Now you can knock it out just like that.
Yeah,
almost every player has his own station, just about.
Yeah, and that was the biggest point that Brandon made in the article he wrote, was you'd have to go from a squat rack over to a bench, you know, but these new stations are designed where you can just do a ton of stuff without ever leaving.
You rarely
spot.
Have to move. Yeah. The other thing that stood out is, and this is kind of funny, is how wide the benches were.
Yeah, Hilgart talked about that in his video.
Yeah, because, you know, linemen are 300 pounds, and they barely fit on regular-sized bench presses. I never really thought about that.
Yeah, they're roughly twice as wide as a regular bench.
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah.
So the other thing I wanted to add was one of the questions I had up back to the Student Athlete Performance Center was, you know, how closely do they track the athlete's food, you know? Not that I studied any of this stuff, but I thought to myself, you know, you could literally, when an athlete goes and gets their food and goes through whatever line, you could literally track everything they're eating. So those were some of the questions we had for Allison. She said, it's not like that. You know, when they come up, we will counsel them. And so they'll talk to the athletes individually, walk them through the lines and say, you know, since your goal is to gain weight, you should eat these things. If your goal is to lose weight, you should eat these things. And so it's just an ongoing process where they counsel the athletes, but they don't crack the whip or anything like that. You know,
and you know, it might sound like a lot, you know, 105 football players, but very quickly you start to figure out the players that need counseling and don't. Like, I'm pretty sure if I was a nutritionist over there, I don't think I would have had to have said a word to Divine Diablo all 4 years or 5 years he was at Virginia Tech. Yeah. Like, there are some guys you know you don't need to say anything to. And then there's other guys you know need extra special attention when it comes to stuff like that, right? So it's not as complicated or it's spread out as it sounds, because you know the guys who need the most help and who you need to stay on,
and you can focus
on those guys.
So they've got an oven up there, like a. It's not a brick oven, but it was actually a.
Oh,
flame
there's an oven. Open flame.
Yeah, an open flame for doing pizzas, all different kinds of pizzas. And just a random example, you can get the Angus burger or you can get the turkey burger. And I'm sure the nutritionists are going, you go over here and get the beef burger, you go over here and get the turkey burger, that kind of stuff.
So I have been to the Student Athlete Performance Center. I didn't go with you guys, but I've walked in there before. And 2 points I want to make. A, the design of it is just really, really well done. Did you guys walk through the hallway? the connects from Castle into it. I mean,
and for those listening or and watching, it's the hallway that went from the concourse in Castle Coliseum to the Bowman Room.
Yeah.
The Student Athlete Performance Center is what used to be the Bowman Room.
Yeah.
For those of you who've ever been,
and it's
to
got
Bowman
like
Room.
These. What's the best way to describe that hallway? I mean, it's like orange and white.
It's got a lot of quotes on the wall.
Yeah, just a really cool entrance. So back when I went in November, I respected Virginia Tech's wishes to not release photos of these things. So I took photos of the Student Athlete Performance Center, including the hallway you're talking about, and of course the weight room with no equipment in it. And I did put them on our subscriber board. I didn't do a photo gallery out for the main area of the site. But now that they've done all the public display of everything, this week I'll try to find time to go ahead and do a couple of photo galleries so you can see the hallway that you're talking about. It's just the walls are backlit with quotes on them and pictures of Virginia Tech Athletics. You have to see it. It's kind of hard to describe.
And another really cool feature, I don't know if you guys could tell, but there's a little porch. Like very small, you can open the doors that are towards the outdoor part of the practice fields. And that'll I've been be on the nice point, there's big chairs.
It's like lounge chairs. It's like on your balcony or something. That'll be a really nice place to have a meal when the weather warms up.
So but I also like, feel like it's a great place to go as a student athlete just to like study instead of having to go to D2 per
Trey
se.
Trey Turner's
everybody.
Already said he spends a lot of time there.
Oh yeah.
Thank goodness. Because he's one of those that needs to add some weight.
And
right.
And he said, in his comments about it, he said, and I remember when Witt first talked about this project years ago, he had a little session with the media in the football meeting room. This must have been 2017.
Wow, yeah. Okay.
And
because they were announcing the $16 million donation.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And this was, I think this was 4 years ago. It's been a while.
Mm-hmm.
But he talked about the camaraderie that would build amongst not just athletes in a certain sport, but athletes across all mm-hmm. sports, that they'll encounter each other up there. And the reason I bring that up is Trey Turner talked about that. He said the football players will go up there and then hang out afterwards.
Well, let's compare it to like let's say you get off work and you're not a football player, you're a regular person. You get off work, you go to your local watering hole and you meet your buddies who are also just getting off work. Well, this is kind of like that for student athletes at Virginia Tech, except that, it's not a bar. It's a restaurant, right? You get off work, and then you go meet your buddies right there, and you have dinner or lunch or whatever.
And you get to talk about things you don't get to talk about during practice, music, TV shows, things like that.
And one more thing I just wanted to point out, I just think the way that everything's been designed is really unique for the football players, right? You think about the last 5 or 6 years, you've got the locker room right below the Student Athlete Performance Center, right? Just mm-hmm. about.
Yeah, right below it.
Beamer Barn right to the left, right, with the indoor practice facility. And then those gates can open. And then there's the outdoor field. Then there's the stadium. Then there's the weight room. And then there's the Student Athlete Performance Center right there. Yeah. Just like a perfect but you can if you, if do you everything on, you need right there.
If you get on Google Maps, get the overhead view and you can just draw a circle right around it, and it's like everything that a football player at Virginia Tech is a part of needs is all within, a 100-yard from one end to the other radius basically.
And the only way in which, of course, all that got compromised was they originally wanted 2 outdoor fields, but mm-hmm. and they wanted to put the indoor facility back in where Stadium Woods is. And if you follow Virginia Tech Athletics and have for the last 15 years, you know what that turned into. And so the indoor facility actually sits where there was supposed to be an outdoor field.
Right.
So if you look around the country at most programs have 2 outdoor practice fields and the indoor facility.
I think UNC has 1 outdoor grass field and 1 outdoor turf field that they'll use depending on who they're playing the upcoming week, whether they're playing on turf or on grass.
So VT is – I don't know that a program will use 3 practice fields all at the same time, but they do have 2 practice fields. The indoor, of course, has artificial turf. They got the grass outdoor. So they have everything they need. It's just kind of threw that out there to put things in perspective that most places have 2 outdoor fields.
So you guys got to see the new weight room, the Student Athlete Performance Center, and you guys got to go in and see practice.
Right. So
yeah, that was the boring part.
No, we did not like it. We didn't sit there for the entire practice. But
tell us a little bit about what that experience was like.
So what they do is when they practice football, they have 5-minute periods. I remember under Frank and his staff, the periods varied in time.
Somewhere there were like 10 to 15 minutes back then. There were fewer periods, but they were longer periods.
So Fuente, so they let us in for the first 15 5-minute periods. So that's a long time. We were there for an hour and 15 minutes. And so they have a clock up on the timer up on the wall there. And you know, it counts up to 5 minutes or down from 5 minutes.
And by the way, it's a different drill every period.
Yeah. Right. So everybody moves around and there is no time wasted.
Right. Mm.
You know, the players are always, they're either participating in a drill or they're running from one drill to another. Mm-hmm. So
that's impressive real quick, because you think about football and how many players there are. Like smaller sports like basketball, there's no standing around. I feel like football's a sport where you might not be in a drill, so that's impressive.
I think the evolution of practice throughout the history of football is probably it's pretty interesting to study. Yeah. I remember in high school there was a whole lot of standing around because so much of practice was scrimmage work and things like that. Now, these days there's not as much scrimmage work for anybody because these dudes are so big and strong these days that there's so many injuries and things like that. So it's more position.
Plus CTE concerns. You don't want guys banging heads all day long.
Plus it's so there's more positional work and things like that. And we've seen it evolve at Virginia Tech from 15-minute periods to 5-minute periods because I think the reasoning for that is, I don't know if this is actually the reasoning or not. If Fuente was here, I would actually ask him. But obviously, you know, people in that age group have shorter attention spans these days. I think it's easier to ask them to do something for 5 straight minutes and keep their attention than to ask them to pay close attention and be really dialed in for 15 minutes. Like, if you constantly keep things changing, then they won't get bored, right? There's even been some NFL coaches over the last few years that, you know, you used to have these long 2-3 hour film sessions in the NFL, and now these dudes, they can't concentrate for that long because they grew up in an era of this where there was always something new popping up in front of them. So it's like, you've seen some NFL coaches, like, we'll go like 15 or 20 minutes in a film session, then give them a break, and then come back and do another 15 or 20 minutes or something like that. So I think that has something to do with it, is attention spans are shorter these days. But I like the way the practice is set up. I have no basis for comparison because I'm not going to a bunch of other teams' practices, but I like that there's constant change.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you talk about the sizes of staffs. There's 105 athletes out there, maybe even more than that this time of year. I don't know what the roster restrictions are. And if you're going to be putting everybody through drills, you need not just your head coach and 10 assistants. You need more guys. So there's a lot of coaches.
There's a lot of assistants out there that I don't even know who they are, to be honest.
Yeah. Whereas in the old days, you'd go to practice and you could just everyone.
It was Frank Beamer and his 9 assistants and 2 graduate assistants, and that was it. Yeah. Yep.
So let me preface by saying we were talking before the podcast started that I was asking you how did practice go, which I'm about to ask you on the podcast set now. And you did say that it's a spring practice with guys in jerseys. It's very tough to say. So let me preface by saying, you know, guys got to see a little portion of it. But who stood out the most to you in your hour and 15 minutes of practice? Like, who were 2 or 3 players you're like, wow, he looks good?
Learned a long time ago that you can't take too much out of a practice, especially depending on the group, like running backs. I mean, they were in shoulder pads and shorts, right?
They weren't full contact. They all look fast to me, and they all catch the ball pretty well.
Right, and so, like, unless a running back is running behind an offensive line that's fully blocking and he's getting tackled, you can't really tell too much about him. So every time one of these practices gets opened, it's more about just talking to some people there and that are in the program and learning things that you didn't already know. That's the most important part of open practices.
Yeah.
Now, with that being said, I thought Braxton Burmeister had a very good day. He has definitely put on about 10 or 12 pounds. Really solid, compact-looking guy now. Now, to be fair, that's the first time I've ever seen Braxton Burmeister in person.
Wow. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sorry, just, yeah.
In fact, that's the first time I've ever seen any Virginia Tech football player in person since 2019. Unless I saw him at Kroger or something like that.
Yeah, because
right?
spring practice 2020 didn't happen.
Which exactly. You might see at Kroger.
Right, right. Yeah, so probably not as much now with the Student Athletes Performance Center. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, I thought he looked like a bigger guy than he looked on TV last year. So him being up around 215 or so looks accurate to me. I thought he was very accurate throwing the ball. I didn't see a bad ball from him whenever I was watching him.
So I remember, so we were allowed a reporter and a photographer. So I was the photographer. I was carrying around and trying to get pictures of guys. So I didn't watch a whole lot of that, but I do remember one where there was basically a fly pattern to Trey Turner down the sideline. And I think it was Burmeister through he dropped a dime.
It was the first two passes of the wide receiver versus DBs drill straight up, which the DBs dominated, except for the first two plays. When Burmeister, 45 yards down the field, fly patterns, boom, hit him dead in stride.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I thought he was good. I thought he was sharp, looked in command. Now, we didn't see a team session with the offensive linemen in front of him. And
yeah, they're not
like
going to let us watch that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they don't even – they may or may not even have done that on the day we were there anyway. Yeah. So, but I thought he looked sharp. As far as any other individual, like, I don't know that, like, anybody's play on the field actually stood out to me. I will say Nerell Pollard, he's up closer to Deshaun Crawford size now. Pollard was always in the 260 to 265 range, and now he looks 285.
Yeah, the rumor is 285, so yeah. We'll see what happens when they update.
So he's had a productive offseason, it looks like. Jordan Williams, that dude looks the part.
The transfer from Clemson.
Tech's defensive tackle group will feature seven players with experience at this level, even all the way down to Max Philpott, who earned a scholarship in the offseason, who would be the seventh defensive tackle right now. If you're seventh defensive tackle on your roster, who, quite frankly, you probably don't even have enough reps to get him into practice once the season starts and you're game planning for the next opponent. If he's got experience on the field, then you're pretty deep. So I feel good about Virginia Tech's group of defensive tackles. And the whole defensive line, Belmar's still out with an injury. Right. Garbutt's back, fortunately. But I liked the spirit of that group. I thought they had good camaraderie and everything like that. I thought Jordan Williams was a big part of that. They seemed to be having a lot of fun, and I thought they had good chemistry.
Here's a tweet from Andy Bitter that went off of that. Our friend Andy's been on the show. No one, and I mean no one, got more excited today than D-line coach Bill Teerlink when a couple of his defenders ripped loose a fumble during one drill.
Yep.
The offense put a couple balls on the ground, which got a big reaction and some up-downs. Hashtag hope.
And some up-downs from the offensive from players, by the way.
Yeah.
So that's cool. And again, that's another person that you have not seen in person, correct, is Bill Teerlink.
I never laid eyes on Bill Teerlink in person until yesterday.
So just it sounded like he was pretty energetic, fair to say?
Yeah, for things like that, for sure. You know, Jordan Williams and him kind of seemed to be joined at the hip from what little bit I saw.
Yeah, and after, you know, as we were on our way out, Teerlink was standing and talking, and then the defensive linemen were all around him, and they were all listening, you know, and I couldn't even really understand what he was talking about, but they're all nodding.
Yeah, well, they were about to do a team session, I think, and they were going over things like that. But the drill Andy was talking about, it's basically the tight ends and the defensive linemen. And the whole goal is for the defensive lineman to try to rip the ball loose and the tight end to try to prevent them from ripping the ball loose. Well, the defensive lineman won that battle, actually. Mm-hmm. And if this was a full-fledged TV show, we could actually demonstrate the drill. But it's people
we got the helmet right here.
Yeah, exactly.
We'd move the table out of the way.
Where's my lunch pail?
Yeah, but at any rate, yeah, so you saw some tight ends doing up-downs. And that's the part of practice that gets really competitive, right? And well, there's not going to be that many situations where in a game where a defensive end or a defensive tackle is actually wrapping up a tight end and trying to strip the ball away. This is more about Yes, it's a useful drill. It can be a useful drill, but this is more about instilling competitiveness and building chemistry. And that's where I talked about defensive line chemistry and everything. Yeah. Those guys were really, like, they were on the same team out there. They were trying to beat the tight ends.
So. Yeah, and so, you know, defensive backs and wide receivers is always a similar thing. And that pass I talked about where Burmeister dropped a dime into Trey Turner's mm-hmm. arms, Breon Murray knocked it out of his hands.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a line in Chris's article that says, in today's practice, the defensive backs definitely seemed ahead of the receivers. We're going to bring a little tease in episode 174 of the Tech Sideline Podcast because we are doing position previews for the upcoming season. Today we're doing receivers and tight ends. So I'll ask Chris, what did he mean by that? We'll talk about the receivers that you guys saw in person last week in practice in just a moment here as we step aside for a break on episode 174 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. Still a lot more to get through. Receivers and tight ends talk. We'll talk a little baseball and softball and then get to your questions on the Tech Sideline Podcast. It's everyone's favorite tournament of the year. The golfers are in Augusta, Georgia to compete for the coveted jacket. And DraftKings, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is putting you in the center of the action by giving you a shot to land in the green. This week, DraftKings is giving you 100-1 odds on the golfer of your choosing to finish in the top 10. If you haven't tried DraftKings, this is the time. Turning $1 into $100 is simple. Pick any golfer from this weekend's tournament, and if they finish in the top 10, you cash $100. 100-1 odds on an offer like this doesn't come around often, so sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook now to get in on all of the action and choose your golfer before the tournament tees off Thursday morning. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code TSL when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 if the golfer of your choosing finishes in the top 10 of this weekend's tournament. That's code TSL to turn $1 into $100 for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older, Virginia only, new customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call the Virginia Problem Gambling Helpline, 888-532-3500. We'll step aside for a break. When we come back, we preview receivers and tight ends heading into the 2021 football season for Virginia Tech. We're back in just a moment. You're watching and listening to the Tech Sideline Podcast. Welcome back in to episode 174 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. Great to have you with us for our first podcast in the month of April as we record on Monday morning, April 5th. Evan Hughes back alongside Chris Coleman and Will Stewart, Malcolm Stewart behind the scenes. A reminder, if you are watching on YouTube and you have a question for Will or Chris, we will have more time than normal to get to your questions. We already have a couple of great ones queued up from Zach, Derek, Justin, Les. We will get to those all in just a little bit. And Will, we have 22 likes right now.
We need
a little
more.
Bit more than that, right? Just we need more. Simple, like and subscribe.
Yeah, so a lot of people come into the podcast when it's live. They come in after the beginning so they can get the directive after the break to like and subscribe.
That's why we need the graphic to pop up.
We do. Well, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
Well, we transition to talk about receivers and tight ends. Again, for the next couple of podcasts, we are going to preview every position heading into the 2021 season for Virginia Tech football. If you missed our discussion last week on quarterbacks and running backs, that's episode 173, and we went in-depth about Braxton Burmeister and the running back room. So, Chris, you mentioned it. I teased it right before we went to break. You said that the DBs are ahead of the receivers. Well, why is that? Well,
yeah,
there's a lot of youth.
There's a lot of youth.
So let me ask you a two-part question. One, what did you take away from the receivers that you saw in practice? And B, what are your expectations for this receiver group once the season kicks off in August?
I expect Trey Turner and Tavion Robinson to be good players. And after that, I don't really have any expectations of that group at all.
I expect James Mitchell to be used a lot, sort of as a wide receiver.
He could potentially be. Yeah. I'm not questioning their talent level, but there are 9 scholarship players on the roster this spring. 5 of them are freshmen. 4 of those 5 freshmen are true freshmen, 2 of which are supposed to still be in high school. Your most experienced freshman is redshirt freshman Jaden Paiute, who's out with an injury. So that means there's only 8 available scholarship receivers this spring, and of those, 25% are supposed to still be in high school. So you've got Dwayne Lofton going up against, you know, Jermaine Waller and Dorian Strong, who, in my opinion, are two of the best cornerbacks in the country. And that, you know, that's not going to be pretty for the offense. Especially when you compare that to the fact that Virginia Tech has 4 cornerbacks with starting experience. They've got Shamari Connor, a 2-year starter at WIP. Keonta Jenkins, I think, at free safety is a future NFL player. There's a lot of experienced players back there. So experienced. Tech has so many experienced quarterbacks this year. Did I say quarterbacks or corner?
You said quarter, but we
I meant corner. Certainly don't have many experienced quarterbacks, but Tech has so many experienced cornerbacks this year that I could certainly see them on, like, third and long situations, you know, 3rd and 8, 3rd and 10, 3rd and 12, you know, depending on whether the other team is running a up-tempo, no huddle or not. You could actually take Shamari Connor out, who sometimes struggles in coverage against quicker slots, and bring in a corner, a real corner, to play that nickel role in those long yardage situations. I think there's more depth. So, like, if Breon Murray's not a starting corner, or Armani Chapman's not a starting corner, but they come in on 3rd and 8, 3rd and 10, and that gives you a better matchup against a slot receiver.
Which brings the question, is Daz Newsome back at UNC?
I have no idea.
No, I'm pretty sure he's
I don't know why he would be.
Oh, good.
I think him and Dyami Brown are both
draft
good.
Not 100% sure.
But I don't know.
When you talk about Shamari Connor in coverage, I have Daz Newsome flashbacks.
No doubt.
Let's start with who we know in this receivers room. Okay. And you guys both just mentioned that you expect Trey Turner and Tavion Robinson to be really good players on this team. Well, what does specifically Trey Turner need to do to take his game to the next level? What are you looking for to Trey to improve on for this upcoming season?
Well, Trey Turner says he wants to get up to 195.
I endorse that completely.
He's currently listed at 187.
In fact, I've been writing about that since last season. I was like, 195 to 200, and he says 195 is the goal. Okay. I think there's plenty of times this past season where I felt like he was one broken tackle away.
Yeah, yeah.
And if he was just a little bit stronger, a little bit more muscular.
And I mentioned the play where Burmeister dropped it right in there, and that was in the end zone when that ball hit Trey Turner in the hands, in the gut, and Breon Murray knocked it out. So, you know, no more to those kind of things. You know, Trey's a good receiver. He's a guy that, I don't know his stats off the top of my head, but he's been very consistent.
His numbers have been very consistent year by year.
Yeah, so
But the problem is, you know, he's pretty much the exact same player he was when he was a true freshman. Yeah. Now, he was a 4-star recruit, big-time offer list. Tech got him over Florida State. And when he came in, and remember the second half of 2018 as a true freshman, we really started lighting it up, and like, oh, man, this guy's going to be really, really, really good. He was 187 pounds then, and guess what? He's still 187 pounds.
Right.
I don't think he's embraced the practice field stuff that you have to do to be a good football player.
So, and you know, we've talked about that many times, and we specifically mentioned Trey. So I'm not enough of an analyst to say, you know, he needs to work on his cuts. None of that kind of stuff. Just let's see the next step. Let's see you be better than you were as a freshman.
He's got such a big frame, and he was 187 as a true freshman, and he wants to be 195 now. Quite frankly, he should have been 195 as a true sophomore.
Right.
There was no reason for him to not gain any weight between those 2 years, right? So I think Trey's a guy, you know, the light bulb comes on for different guys at different stages of their career. Sometimes it's on their entire career, and sometimes it doesn't come on until later. But I think it's finally hitting home with Trey some of the things that he needs to do and maybe that he hasn't been doing in the past. He needs to do them now if he wants a chance to make it to the next level.
Hokies return Tavion Robinson, who was the team's leading receiver last year in receptions and yards. So, felt like to me, his freshman year 2 years ago, Chris, he was a really smooth punt returner who had potential as a receiver.
Yeah.
And last year, he took steps forward as a receiver.
As for sure. I thought, you know, the fact that he was he was only a slot receiver as a freshman, and they used him in more ways, used him in a more variety of ways as a sophomore. The guy, it's interesting, you know, he's going into his third year in the program, and this is his first spring practice. You know, he wasn't an early enrollee. He came in as a true freshman and started right away, and then he was supposed to take a big step forward last spring, and of course spring got canceled. And as it turns out, he still took a pretty big step forward, I thought, as a football player, despite not having spring practice. So I'm sure the coaching staff is glad, here we are entering his third year in a program, that he's finally getting that time in the spring to really focus in on fundamentals. It's 15 straight practices where you don't have to worry about preparing for the next opponent. You just work on becoming the best football player you can be.
Right. So let's take a step back and give a general statistic about the receivers. And I can't remember where I read this, but I just looked it up. And knowing David Cunningham, David was the one who pointed this out. You know, there were only two wide receivers last season with over 30 catches and over 500 yards. Mm. Trey Turner and Tavion Robinson. Tavion had 38, Trey had 34. Tavion had 592 yards, Trey had 529. Then you've got James Mitchell, Raheem Blackshear, which surprised me. He's the fourth leading receiver in terms of number of catches. Nick Gallo, Khalil Herbert, all the way down to Caleb Smith with 8 catches. So as a group, they need to be more productive.
Changa had 3.
Yeah.
Way down to Changa, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Evan Fairs had 2.
And they were in the same game, weren't they?
Probably at the end of the year.
It was Clemson. Yeah. He had 2 against Clemson, ironically.
Yeah, so that's kind of a 10,000-foot view of the wide receiver core. And maybe if you haven't – like I'm not the stats guy that I used to be. Looking at that, I didn't know that. So there needs to be more production from the wide receivers as a group.
Well, yeah, I would agree with that. I think – some of that was due to their quarterbacks, and at the same time, I think the quarterbacks were limited by their receivers, too, to a certain extent. Yeah. Like, I think Trey Turner could catch more passes with, quite frankly, Ryan Willis as his quarterback than Hendon Hooker this past year. But I also think Hendon Hooker, at times, was limited by the fact that his receivers were struggling to get open.
Yeah.
So it kind of works both ways.
I think it does matter with the throw Caleb Smith here, for example, real quick. You remember in 2019, he had 2 touchdowns versus 3 games of the year with Ryan Willis as his quarterback.
Yeah.
Hooker comes in. And so I think quarterbacks matter. And
they do.
You know, I mean,
Willis had issues protecting the football for some reason in that stretch. Like that first month of the season, he was a turnover machine. And I don't think I'll ever be able to figure that out, because he was not a turnover machine the previous season. And, in fact, played quite well, generally speaking, you know, considering he was a backup at the start of the season. The guy's got a big-time arm. I think, obviously, when you lose a guy like Damon Hazleton because he's not going to catch enough passes because Ryan Willis isn't his quarterback anymore. And he's gone now, so I guess we can say it, but like I never felt like Hendon Hooker progressed as a passer.
Yeah.
I feel like almost all the passes he completed at Virginia Tech was because of some kind of specially designed rollout misdirection, the smoke and mirrors offense, right?
As opposed to dropping back and his first
going through his progressions.
And one of those guys beats his man and is open.
Right, exactly. Which is both a good and a bad reflection on Brad Cornelson.
Yeah.
You know, you can argue that he's not great at developing quarterbacks as natural passers, but my God, he gets the most out of his quarterbacks because he can design a smoke or mirrors offense. Right. Like, I don't think there's any way in Hades that, like, the 2019 Tech offense should have been productive at all, starting three freshmen at times on the offensive line. A quarterback who was extremely limited, 180-pound running back, and Deshaun McLeese. There's no way that offense should have done anything, but he managed to make it effective.
Yeah.
So I actually think from an pure offensive coordinating standpoint and design of an offense, he's pretty good, but I don't know how good he is at developing quarterbacks, so it's a give-and-take situation, and that's we got completely off track.
To bring it back to the receivers, ideally what you would like is – you really don't want James Mitchell to be thought of as your third wide receiver. I'd like three wide receivers who are a threat, and then James Mitchell. You know, four guys that can go out of patterns and cause trouble.
All right, quickly, because I want to get to the tight ends here, make sure we have enough time for a lot of questions. There's a lot of talented newcomers. Chris, you've pointed out that two of them should be in high school right now.
Yeah.
But group of, before we get to them, actually, real quick, I think the one name in this receiver room that everybody, Tech fans, are holding their breath on because they think he could be special is Jaden Paiute.
Yeah.
So much hype around him coming in out of high school, misses last year to a season-ending injury. What should we expect from Paiute? Do you expect him to come in and contribute as a top three receiver right away? Expectations for him?
He hasn't had a chance to practice.
I mean, it wouldn't shock me, though, that by default he was the third starting receiver, but practice or not. I just think his talent level is that far ahead of the other options. I think he's one of those guys who has his head on straight. We've got some pictures of him in practice last year before he got hurt where you could tell he took the weight room seriously and everything like that. In fact, whenever I talk about him, there's one particular picture that I use all the time. And you know, the dude's just jacked.
And the promise of Jaden Paiute is the fly pattern, stretch the defense, right?
Yeah. And quite frankly, I don't know how he compares to Trey Turner on a 40-yard dash or anything like that. Doesn't have to be a 50-yard bomb down the field. You get a guy in space, and look, he outweighs Trey Turner by 20 pounds, even though he's 3 years younger, right? That dude works his tail off in the weight room. So
he's an inch shorter and outweighs him by that
Right, right. So he's a little more stocky and solid. So he's more likely when he catches that ball and the safety comes up and lays a hit on him to bounce off that hit and take it the distance. And he can use his speed, which is very, very good from what I understand, to take a 12-yard slant, break that one tackle, and then go.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe there's an expectation or a wish that he can be the next Andre Davis if he really is as fast as they say.
Well, you know,
but remember, Davis had Vic throwing to him, and Vic had a cannon, and Braxton Burmeister doesn't have a cannon.
Well, Vic and Davis were the perfect combination for each other because Andre Davis was one of the few Virginia Tech football players ever that I think had actual world-class sprinting speed.
Yeah.
Remember, the guy went to the NFL and returned two kickoffs for touchdowns in one game.
Yeah.
And he just made NFL players look like they were running in sand. Andre Davis was the only wide receiver in the country that could catch up to a Michael Vick deep ball.
And Vic also had enough arm to wait and know he was going to be open and still get it to him.
Right? So they were the perfect combination. We saw 2 years later when Michael Vick wasn't in the program anymore, and Andre Davis was just kind of wasted out there because that was his strength, and Virginia Tech couldn't get him the ball down
couldn't
the field.
Leverage it.
Yeah.
All right, so quickly, a final thought on the receivers, and then we'll transition briefly, talk about the tight ends. Out of the following names, Jalen Jones, Tyree Saunders, Dallin Wright, Dwayne Lofton, those four. Will, I'll start with you and then go to Chris. Give me a name of those four you think could be someone who comes on and contributes right away as a freshman.
A guy I'm really rooting for. I don't know that I can break it down just from looking at heights and weights on a piece of paper, but Tyree Saunders has always been very enthusiastic about the program and about being here, and he's a guy, so he's listed as 6'0", 196, so he's good size. And he's a guy that I just root for to be successful.
Tyree reached out to us to do an interview on him last offseason, and we're like, oh, sweet. So we got Corey or whoever to do it. And it's like, oh, it's cool that he wanted to do an interview with TSL. Us. And then the same week, like, five Virginia Tech sites had features on Tyree Saunders, right?
So yes. He made himself available.
Yeah. But he's going to do very well in the
press conference.
And press conferences and, what's the NIL?
Name, image, and likeness.
The NIL era, I would say.
All right.
What about you, Chris, of those four?
Of the four true freshmen? Wright and Saunders enrolled last year, so they're kind of super true freshmen to a certain extent. But the guy I like out of all of them the most is probably the lowest rated, and that's Jalen Jones. You know, he went to Thomas Jefferson High School. And as you were telling me before the show started today, Thomas Jefferson High School, they have to play all their games on Saturdays because they don't have lights to play on Friday nights, right? They haven't had an FBS player since the 70s. This is historically one of the best one of the worst footballing schools in the state.
Hmm.
And
not as of late, but historically.
Historically. Jalen Jones was a guy, when he was recruited, was listed at 180, 185. He enrolls at 203. You know, he's supposed to be playing his senior season right now, so he's still inexperienced somewhat. But I like that he's a natural receiver. 76 catches. I forget how many yards, 1,300, 1,500, something like that as a junior. He reminds me a lot of Cam Phillips, and he can play on the outside. He can play on the inside. And Evan, you were telling me this, that you know that one of Virginia Tech's other wide receivers, one other upperclassman, has straight up said off the record that Jalen Jones is the best out of those young dudes.
He's just turning heads and doing a great job.
So, and he's the guy I liked during the recruiting process because I just thought he looked like a natural receiver on film.
Yeah, here's his numbers real quick at TJ. You're right, 76 receptions, over 1,300 yards, 18 touchdowns as a junior in 2019. Right. And as you said, first player to sign with the Power 5 school at Thomas Jefferson since 1974.
Yeah.
So, that's a really big deal.
Yeah. I don't know, just watching his film, he just does a lot of things naturally well, I think. And I doubt he's going to wow you with a 40 time or anything like that. He's just a football player. Cool. So while I would certainly prefer to redshirt him and every other freshman in here, I don't think – all right, this list of 9 scholarship receivers, that's not conducive to, you know, redshirting every single true freshman this year. I mean, especially when 4 of the 9 are true freshmen.
Folks,
right?
59 minutes in, first time for the redshirt.
Is it?
Just want to make it aware. That's pretty good, Chris.
That's a record. I think Jalen Jones will play this year. I think a couple of those guys will probably.
So the most likely we think to play and contribute is Jalen Jones, and the one we're rooting for is Tyree Saunders.
Well, Tyree Saunders and Wright, of course, they're going to play. I mean, they're supposed to be redshirt freshmen.
Right.
This past year doesn't count. But of the two, you know, you've got those two super redshirt freshmen, and then you've got two actual true freshmen in Lofton and Jones. And I think of those two, Jones is the most likely to play. Lofton, if he gets on the field this year, they're going to have to change his jersey. Number 30 for a slot receiver. he needs something different.
Well, as does maybe a couple of tight ends who are in the 90s right now. So let's transition from receivers to tight ends. And listen, we know that arguably the best player on this football team coming back is James Mitchell, right? Someone who might very well be the number one tight end in the 2022 NFL draft coming up. Well, we've seen him in the slot. We've seen him return punts out of emergency situations. I mean, he kind of does everything for Tech. Does his role change going into next year more? Does he get more receptions, do you think? Like,
I'm still hung up on the fact that he came back. I haven't gotten beyond that. I'm not sure, and I didn't read a lot about it. Chris, do you remember what his reasons for coming back were? Did anybody
just think he
can
improve his stock? I guess that's the only reason.
You know, and not being a guy who watches the draft closely, I don't know who was available this year that could push him down the board.
You know, Pitts is the best tight end in the country, and he's coming out this year.
Monster.
Yeah. Like, which, honestly, oh, by the way, Tech almost got him.
Really?
That came down to Tech in Florida.
Yeah.
Oh my heavens.
And it was really, really, really close.
Total side note, that dude might become a Hall of Fame tight end.
They're
talking, I mean, there's an argument to, like, take him number 3 overall, tight end.
Tech almost signed him and James Mitchell in the same class.
Ooh. Oh, my heavens.
And Pitts, Tech was the first to offer Pitts, right?
Yeah, pretty sure. Yeah.
I'm just really glad James Mitchell decided to come back because they do need a third guy that they can rely on to catch the football. And I don't see another guy yet in the rest of the tight ends that can fill that role.
Yeah, I feel like the X factor who could elevate the offense more if he's involved, Chris, is Nick Gallo. I feel like he's the guy that everyone's talked about as a young player with talent. Is this the year he kind of takes a step forward?
Oh, I think his third year in the program, going into his third year in the program, he's poised to have a good year. I do wonder off the top of my head if Duelius has passed him, though, because Justin Fuente, and I want to stress that this is an off-the-record comment.
Okay.
Fuente made an off-the-record comment to someone recently that he thinks Duelius might be an NFL tight end.
He has been a guy who's been patient.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he was hurt his first couple years and got into the playing rotation and did a solid job as the third tight end last year. And, you know, we talked earlier about the light coming on for different people at different times. I remember Brendan Hill back in the day, and he didn't get on the field for Tech until his fifth year. Right, and then he had a very good season, senior season.
Until he
Oh, wait, Dooley is 6'5", 240, redshirt junior.
Right. So, Chris, help me remember, was there a time earlier in Dooley's career where we weren't sure if he was going to be a tight end or a wide receiver?
If you recall, when he was a true freshman, I guess this was 2017, when Tech, that year, that was basically the year they just had Cam Phillips and nobody else.
Yeah.
And they were really struggling in the red zone, and they pulled his red shirt and played him in the Boston College of that game because they felt like they needed another red zone threat. So he played maybe like four snaps in that game.
That's back when red shirts, if you played a single game, you lost the red shirt.
Right. Yeah. And but he got hurt in that game.
What a
shame.
Yeah.
So they got him a medical.
Okay.
Yeah. So he was still able to red shirt. The rule back then was, it was like three and you had to be hurt or something like that.
And I don't think Tech ever told us he was hurt. They just played him in that game and then didn't play him again.
Right. So
we were sitting there going, what the heck did they do that for?
Right. Right.
And then you find out later.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I do think in that game he lined up as a receiver.
That rings a bell. Yeah.
And when he played in high school in Charlotte, if you go back and watch his tape, he was an outside receiver.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Dooley's, Gallo, and Mitchell. To me, I'll be honest with you. Like when I think about this Tech team, Will, and all the different position groups, like we're going to talk about defensive line next week, right? I mean, that's going to be a fun position group to watch. And the DBs have some young players, but to me, the tight ends to me are like that cool, like X factor. Like you just don't quite know they could be they could turn into the best position group arguably on this team.
I think the good thing about the group of tight ends is there's no unknowns there. There's nobody you can say, oh, well, I think that guy can be a pretty good player, but he's good. No, this is three solid guys in here at tight end.
But I would like to be surprised by Dooley's catching 20, 30 passes.
Sure.
Something like that would be very cool.
Sure, that would be cool.
Don't know if he's going to have the opportunity. But.
And then quickly, you mentioned it in your article that's on Tech Sideline real quick. I just want to highlight Wilfred Penne.
Yeah,
real quick,
please.
Because how cool is it to have a football player from France on your team, right?
Yeah, I mean, that dude's huge.
So, Will, what were your impressions from 6'3", 240? And Chris mentioned he could maybe transition to defensive end one day. So
his high school film at defensive end was great.
Okay. Yeah, and I don't know about that 240. He looks bigger.
Oh, man, he looks 255 or 260. Yeah. Like, and I say defensive end, that dude is a hoss, man.
He's very thick.
He's very
from the
waist
down.
Right. He really is.
Is he the kind of player, regardless of position, you feel like he'll just find a way to get on the field?
He's such a good athlete, and he's such a hard worker.
So here's how I think of Wilfred Penne. James Mitchell is 6'3", listed at 6'3", 242. Penne's listed at 6'3", 240, and they look very different to me.
He's just a thicker set guy.
Yeah.
Penne, I like for a lot of reasons. I already mentioned, you know, talent level, work ethic. I think the recruiting process from high school players recruiting them to college in the States is, I don't like it. I've said it before. You know, you get people on Twitter begging 16 and 17 year old kids to come to their school. And some of these kids are going to get big headed and they're not going to work as hard. Because you got grown men, for some reason, think they need to spend part of their day doing stuff like that. That's another story. Wilfred Penne came up in France where they don't do that. He's had nobody kiss his butt. He comes to the States, didn't even know the language. So he had to learn the language while learning the game of football. Picked up wrestling in the process, by the way, and was one of the best wrestlers in New England. I follow this guy on Instagram, and he's putting up his kickboxing videos.
Wow.
I'm sitting here watching him punch a punching bag, and he's got such quick and powerful hands. He's getting his foot up above his head in these kickboxing stuff.
So what are you going to do with this guy?
He's still raw as a football player.
Is he
there is a language gap I mean, yes, he speaks English. He probably speaks better English now by the book than the coaching staff and his teammates. And that's the problem, that they're speaking a slang English that he doesn't know. He only knows English that he learned in a book. So right. there are certain things where he's like, you know, what are you talking about? I don't know what that means. Some of this football terminology can be difficult too. Even if you grew up in the States, football terminology can be difficult. So you've got to overcome things like that. But I think all the tools and the intangibles are there for Panay to be really, really good. I don't know if it's going to be at tight end or on the defensive line.
Don't know if it's going to be this year or next year. Or
right. Assuming after. He would redshirt this year, maybe?
Redshirt, and he would have redshirted this past year. Now here's the problem. Like, he's one of three true freshman tight ends on the roster. Now, he was recruited in last year's class.
So he's been here a year.
Right. Jared Gibble and Jack Holyfield were recruited in this year's class. Now, here's the problem. It's going to lead to attrition down the road. You got four true freshman wide receivers in one class. Well, two of those were from last year's class, and two of them are the 2021 class. But because of COVID, they all count as the same class. So yeah. You can't get any spacing. It's harder to get spacing between these guys. Like, how in the world Jared Gibble, Panay, and Jack Holyfield all going to redshirt in the same year? And how are you going to keep them all happy with playing time over the course of their careers, assuming they're all good enough to play?
You probably can't redshirt one, right? Is that you let one play and then try and get some separation that way?
You might let him play, but is he going to take away snaps from James Mitchell, Nick Gallo, or Drake Duelius? Probably not. So you at that point, I guess you play him on special teams, maybe. But you want to waste a red shirt on just to play a guy on special teams. maybe with Panay you do, because he basically redshirted last year to a certain extent, even though it doesn't count as one. I don't know. It just takes the whole roster management thing up to another level that – I'm sure everyone wishes it was not at that level.
Well, these guys all get paid a lot more money than we do to figure that stuff out.
Well, and guess what? None of them are going to be able to figure it out, because there's only so many. All right. You're trying to win football games. You're not trying to make, I don't know, Dallin Wright happy, right? So it's like, and I'm not criticizing Wright. I'm just picking a name off the list. Like, yeah, I could play him 10 snaps a game if I really wanted to and keep him happy and he stays in the program. But when those 10 snaps I put him in the game, I have to take out Trey Turner.
Does that really help
football? Right, games? Right. So, and then, let's see, and I lost this game because of those 10 snaps, and then I got fired. So ultimately, I got fired because I was trying to keep a freshman happy.
Right.
Right? You can't do both on a lot of occasions.
All right, so we're very close to getting your questions on YouTube. Again, if you're watching right now, drop them in. We've got a couple of right now. But I'm going to do this. I'm going to assign baseball to Chris. I'm going to assign softball to Will, because it was a big weekend for both of those two sports. And so let's start with baseball. Let's do a quick just 60-second update. Honestly, it was a terrific series for the Hokies this weekend against Boston College. What was significant? What do Hokie fans need to know? Why was this weekend important for Tech baseball?
Very important, because they only went in the weekend with two of their three starters. They had to win a bullpen game on Friday night, and they lost it, right?
They came back and Thursday.
Thursday, yeah, because everything Thursday, got pushed, Friday, pushed forward. So the first game of the series, you felt like we really need a good outing from the starter.
Offered
to save our bullpen for the rest of the weekend. Well, they didn't get it, and they lost the game, right?
However, Okuda, who came in a bit, threw seven innings.
Right, so that helped save arms for the rest of the weekend. But still, at that stage, you're like, we've already lost with one of our starters, and this is not setting up to be a series win. But it turned into one, because slowly some more pitching depth has been developed. And the defense has gotten a lot better. Mm-hmm. Like, Kevin Madden looks like a different player right now than he did a month ago at third base. And so imagine that. Like, as soon as you get better relief pitching and as soon as you get better defense, you win 5 out of 6 ACC games.
So if you weren't paying attention over the weekend, Tech won 2 of the 3 games. Boston College won Thursday 7-3. And led Friday 5-0.
And I, you know, it's funny. I was watching the game a little bit. I was taking an exam, listening to Lays and Wells, and I remember my mom came in and she's like, are you watching the game? I was like, Tech had struck out 12 times, could not catch up to a fastball. I mean, did not look good. And then I stopped watching because I had to take an exam. Yeah. Down 5-0 in the seventh, three innings away from losing the series.
To Boston College.
And I believe there were two outs in the ninth, by the way, the bases loaded, down by a run. And Madden, two-run single, just kind of squibbed into right past the second baseman.
Long story short, Virginia Tech is now tied for first in the Coastal Division.
At 9-7.
Right.
11-7.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Now, I know people were getting upset when Tech lost a couple series in a row and then lost to VCU or what, a UNC Greensboro. But, you know, it's important to point out that the year Virginia Tech was a number one seed in the NCAA tournament in 2013, they went 16-14
in the
ACC. That's just the nature of baseball. And they had three non-conference losses that year to teams like VCU and UNC Greensboro. Yeah, those things happen all the time in baseball. That's just the nature of baseball. Even in the majors, you know, your worst team wins 60 games, and your best team loses 60. Right?
But what a great couple of weeks. They were 6-6, and now they're 11-7.
Right. Mm-hmm. And John Schuff will, barring like a complete collapse down the stretch, I would have to think he's ACC Coach of the Year.
Yeah, I agree. I do know that the job on the other side, around like Pittsburgh being as good as they are, is big, right, and Notre Dame. It's going to be Link, yeah, Jarrett. It's going to be Sheff, and it's going to be the coach of Mike Bell.
What did Pitt do this past weekend?
Don't know off the top of my head. Okay. But I think Pittsburgh, like, I mean, Virginia Tech kind of exposed them a little bit,
right,
last, mm-hmm, weekend. And right now, the fact that Tech is Georgia Tech is a perennial power.
They're a power.
Year in, yeah, and year out. So, by the way, so this weekend, Tech baseball at Wake Forest. A winnable series, but let me preface by saying, like, Wake Forest is a good team that will make an NCAA regional. That's at Wake. And then next weekend in Blacksburg, three-game series against Georgia Tech.
Right.
And that'll be biggest series of the year.
Should be good weather.
Yeah, exactly. So, as great as that was for baseball, like backs against the wall, they come back and win a series against a team that Coach Sheff says, by the way, is the hardest team to prepare for in the league, is Boston College. BC, like, that's a good baseball team.
BC has one projected top 10 pick in the draft and two other potential first-round picks.
Yep.
And they have some high-level talent. They swept Auburn earlier this year?
Took the series.
Two out of three against
Auburn. I mean, Auburn in the SEC, that's a big, right, deal. I mean,
yeah.
So, and by the way, one quick note before we transition to softball. So Mike Gambino is the coach of Boston College, and he was an assistant at Virginia Tech. Under Pete Hughes, and I just thought I'd point this out because he's got a lot of ties, and I feel really lucky to work with Andrew Wells, who's the analyst for the ACC Network at Tech when I call games. So he worked with Gambino when he was a player in the mid-2000s, Wells, and he speaks so highly of him and his time in Blacksburg. So they lose that game on Saturday, big win, they're about to fly home, and Gambino took the entire team to the Memorial outside of Burris.
The April 16th Memorial.
And I just thought that was a really classy move, and there's just a lot of respect. I know that both programs have for each other in Gambino, so I thought that was something cool that was worth mentioning on the podcast today.
Yep.
Okay, Will, as big as it was for baseball, Virginia Tech softball now has series wins against Duke, Clemson, and Florida State. They're the queens of the ACC right now, Will.
Yeah, so if you look at the top four teams in the ACC in softball, it's Florida State, Clemson, Virginia Tech, and Duke. And yes, Virginia Tech is collectively 7-3. Is that correct?
One loss to Clemson, one loss to Florida State, one loss to Duke, and yep.
2-1, 2-1. Yeah.
Yep.
So Virginia Tech is 7-3 against the other three teams in the top four of the ACC. The thing that the Hokies have struggled with, I think, that puts them behind Florida State and Clemson is they haven't been able to sweep anyone. They have won something like seven ACC series in a row.
All of them.
Yeah. But I think the thing is so tough, though, is that baseball is still three-game series. To win four games in a sweep is so tough.
Yeah, Tech does seem to have played a tough schedule, too.
Well,
like they've played Duke, Clemson, and Florida State.
And somebody on the softball board phrased it that Florida State's been bottom-feeding, you know. And
yeah.
So let's look at the standings, and I've tweeted this out and talked about it on the boards. Florida State is 12-2 in the ACC. Clemson is 18-4. That's a combined record of 30-6. Those two teams are 30-6. They are 2-4 against Virginia Tech, and 28-2 against everyone else.
Right,
but that's not going to matter. Virginia Tech is currently four games and a loss column behind Florida State, and four up in the win column.
You're talking about ACC tournament seeding.
Yeah.
Think bigger than the ACC tournament. Virginia Tech could be a higher seed in the NCAA tournament relative based on strength of schedule.
Yes.
It's like, who cares what seed you get in the ACC tournament? The ultimate goal is the NCAA tournament. Correct. It's just like in basketball. Quit thinking about whether Tech gets a double bye in the ACC tournament.
But we need to give Bill Brill another reason to spin in his grave.
Right.
So, well, let me say this as well, that Tech very well could be sweeping teams like Pittsburgh and Louisville if they threw Keeley every single game. And there's a lot of really good freshman pitchers that just need innings. And again, I mean, these are – we talk about receivers that are could be in high school right now that didn't have their senior year of high school. That's for all athletes. So you've got these pitchers coming in or position players who haven't played competitively since 2019 in terms of school ball from the majority of them, of course.
Yeah, that's
and you're trying to get them innings. And they're very talented. Mac Osborne threw really well this weekend. Ivy Rosenberry. So I think that's exactly the model.
Keeping freshmen happy.
And they're trying to bring them along.
It extends across all sports.
And by the way, I was actually talking to some people over at softball. They were just mentioning how like Keely Rochard has been like the perfect mentor to – the next crop of Virginia Tech pitchers that are going to be really good when she graduates and when she leaves. So it's been really cool. Top 10 RPI, by the way, Hokie Chip. He's right here.
Top 10 RPI, see?
Yeah, so top 10 RPI. Yeah.
Right.
So let's – but let me –
Like they could end up posting.
That's another really good point. I think Virginia Tech softball has a very good chance of hosting a regional this year.
I prefer to do both, of course, but would you rather host a regional – or be the number one seed in the ACC tournament? Because they aren't mutually exclusive, right?
I think it's hosting a
regional. Not necessarily. Absolutely.
I think 10 times out of 10.
Right. So Tech might not be the number one seed in the ACC tournament, but they might host a regional, whereas Florida State and Clemson may not.
Well, and again, what defines an ACC champion, too? It's the tournament.
Right.
So if there's four really good teams in the ACC and it's at a neutral site, the only thing that matters is you're going to be the away team compared to the home team. I mean, that's it.
But because of how big conferences are these days and they create these big unbalanced schedules, it really makes the postseason conference events from a competitive standpoint, like, irrelevant. This isn't me talking trash on Virginia Tech. This is just stating facts. Virginia Tech had by far the easiest schedule in men's basketball this year. They got the number 3 seed. But they only got the number 9 seed in – were they a 9? Yeah, a 9 in the – no, a 10.
10.
A 10 in the NCAA tournament.
Right.
There have been years in the past where Virginia Tech – I want to say like they're they've been lower seeded in the ACC tournament, been higher seeded in the NCAA tournament because they faced a tougher schedule. I'm trying to say.
Yeah, so
Tech lost like 11 games in 2007, but they played such a tough schedule that they were the number 5 seed in the NCAA tournament, right? So I almost think I understand that tradition is the ACC tournament do as well as possible, but I think sometimes I feel like the traditions of conference tournaments create expectations from the fan base when in reality our focus needs to be on the NCAA tournament. That's the most important thing. Anyway.
Real quick, I want to point this out that Chip Grubb, hosting is going to be crazy. NCAA is predetermining sites this year, and those will be chosen 3 weeks before Selection Sunday.
Why?
And I think that's because of COVID. That's the reason. So that's a great point.
You've got a track record here where Blacksburg is not willing to have people come in from outside.
That's true.
I would be shocked if Virginia Tech.
We're not going to host. Never mind.
let me rephrase by saying, if this was a normal year, there would be a very good chance of them hosting.
Right.
So here are some fun stats. They put this up during the broadcast on the ACC network Saturday. I think. I don't think it was Sunday. I think it was Saturday. And Damian Salas was responsible for feeding these stats to the ACC network. Angela Tincher and Keely Rochard. Did you see this one, Evan? I know you saw my tweet.
No, actually, I have not been on Twitter a ton. So I don't know if saw this.
So through 88 appearances, this is a comparison of Angela Tincher and Keely Rochard through 88 games. Tincture's ERA was 0.99. Rochard is 1.69. Tincture had 54 wins. Rochard has 58. So four more wins. And we all know that's about the hitting support. Complete. They each have 70 complete games through 88 starts. Tincture had 18 shutouts. Rochard has had 27, which I find interesting. Innings, 509 for Tincture, 459 for Rochard. And I think that's because Tech is run-ruling a lot of teams these days. That's partially responsible.
Yeah, there, better bats.
There are games where Keeley pitches five innings instead of seven.
Sure.
Now, of course, strikeouts are the thing. Now, Keeley Rochard strikes a lot of batters out. She's not Kat Osterman, Angela Tincture level, but
real quick, the innings pitch. I just want to make this point, not to cut you off.
Okay,
you know why? Because the offense wasn't there for Tincture.
Oh, I know.
Right?
Yeah,
the run absolutely. Rules just wasn't a possibility. Sure. So I just wanted to point that out. Sorry.
Absolutely right. So it through 88 appearances, Tincture had 966 strikeouts, and Rochard has 618.
So Tincture, basically, there were times. You didn't even need to put a defense on the field. She was just striking.
Tincture had out. So let me run all those numbers again. 509 innings, 966 strikeouts. That's almost two strikeouts per inning. And that's basically what she did for her entire career, is almost two strikeouts an inning. That's nuts. Mm-hmm. Now, meanwhile, Rochard is 459 innings, 618 strikeouts. So that's like 1.3 per
Which
inning.
Is still quite good.
Oh, yeah.
Well, remember Tincture no-hit the Team USA.
Yes. Which, by the way,
you got to strike out a lot of people.
I personally feel like that is one of the most underrated moments in Virginia Tech athletics history.
Absolutely.
I know that football and men's basketball, I mean, those are the sports, and that's where a lot of people pay the more attention to. But to that Team USA team had won over 120 games in a row. You're talking about the best softball players in the world.
Would that be like men's basketball beating the Dream Team?
Yeah.
Yes.
That kind of thing. That's pretty much what
and
that was.
And Angela Tincture had gotten – she should have been on that team, and she got left off. And I think there were some things behind the scenes that, like, I don't know why.
Jenny Finch was a big star back then, and I think Finch pitched that game against Virginia Tech.
I think she did, but there was also many pitchers. But bottom line, she should have been taken on that team. And some about she wasn't, and she goes out there and no-hits them. Tech won 1-0.
They manufactured a run early on, and Tincture made it stand.
So, it's cool. In the Beamer barn, the Beamer Lawson Indoor Practice Facility, you look up, and there's a couple of banners of different sports, and Angela Tincture's there. I mean, she is one of the greatest athletes to ever play at Virginia Tech.
If you made a Mount Rushmore and, you didn't give football and men's basketball bonus points for being revenue sports,
right?
If everything theoretically was equal, she would be on the Mount Rushmore.
So I remember a conversation I had with Whit Babcock years ago, and I don't remember when. I think he was thinking about what to do with the softball program, and I don't know if Scott Thomas had been let go or if Whit was just thinking about it, but he asked me. He said a question, the effect of, how do Virginia Tech fans feel about softball? And I said, well, it is more popular among Virginia Tech fans than you would think. And I said, if you talk about beloved athletes at this university, Bruce Smith, Michael Vick, Angela Tincture is way up there. And so I told Whit, she captured the imagination of Virginia Tech fans. And the other thing about softball is, It's an easy sport to watch and understand. It's everybody played baseball when they were a kid, played softball, wiffle ball, whatever. You can watch the sport. You can just roll in and watch it without really knowing a lot about it. Whereas things like track and lacrosse,
even football to a certain extent, it's like
you got to learn about it.
You got to learn about it. Yeah. There's no play calling in softball. Right?
So I was just kind of pitching him on the idea of. Don't know what you're thinking about, but if you're thinking about going hard to the hole for softball, I think it's kind of worth it.
So Hokie Chip brings up a great point about that game. By the way, we can do a whole podcast on that. It's really cool. That game was broadcast on ESPN, but it was tape delayed. So they showed it later than it was played. I mean, a big deal, right? That was on ESPN. Huh. That game was so people didn't get to watch that live.
And this was the days before all social media.
Right.
So it's not like you have an up-to-date Twitter saying, oh my God, Angela Tincture just beat the
Olympics. Could you imagine that today if like our that happened today with Twitter and social media?
You'd know when it happened.
You'd be
the equivalent is probably Kai Lewis winning a national championship. he became a mega star like yes. overnight when he won his national championship.
So Ahoggie Chip comments, Chip Grubb, Scott Thomas has commented that every player in that game against Team USA would get into that game with Tincture pitching three innings. And then she ended up going the whole game, and Tech ended with some pitchers playing the outfield at the end. So imagine that. So you get into that, and it's a scrimmage, right? So you're not – but imagine that. Like, you're sitting there as a coach. You're Scott Thomas. You're three innings in. You're like, holy cow, we could – like, we're scoreless, or we're up 1-0. Like, we got to try and win this thing. So anyways, this is actually – Hokie Vision did a great little mini documentary on the 10-year anniversary, I think 2 years ago or something like just – or 15 years, whatever. But it's really awesome. You know, Justin let's transition to the comments real quick. Justin Thomas, VT Mount Rushmore – Vic, Tincture, Makai, who gets the last spot?
You know, strong candidate is Bruce Smith.
Number one pick.
That's what Ronnie Adams is trying leader. To do.
No, there are no men's basketball players there.
You go Del Curry?
I'm such a Bimbo Coles fan.
Nikhil might be able to one day make a stronger argument to be the men's basketball representative.
Yeah, but he was only here 2 years.
Yeah, true.
But yeah, anyway, it's a fun discussion. Hey, how about this? Like, over the summer, we've got some more time. We'll do a podcast dedicated to Mount Rushmore. We're going to have some time over
the
summer.
We can argue about that.
Yeah. So, all right, let's transition. I wanted to get in some questions. Les Hodges has been waiting patiently for his question. Lots of talk in various VT forums about quarterback development and whether we are or aren't doing a good job of that. In your view, what are the right elements of quarterback development?
Keep it short.
God, that's impossible. you know, sometimes it may come down to whether you recruit the right quarterback. Some guys are raw by nature, and they just – maybe they got by on their athleticism in high school to a certain extent. Now, granted, there are some really good athletes at quarterback who were definitely great athletes and still developed into – full, you know, complete quarterbacks, you know, guys like Jalen Hurts and people like that, Mahomes. Our quarterback development could, I mean, maybe the issue is we're just recruiting the wrong quarterbacks. That could easily be it is amongst anything else. I never played quarterback, so I don't understand the intricacies of it.
So wait a minute, repeat the question. Let's make sure we're answering the question.
Right.
It was essentially...
In your view, what are the right elements of quarterback development?
I think...
Learning to progress through your reads.
Yeah, and I don't know how you go about doing that because I never played quarterback. I don't know what goes on in a film room or anything like that. I certainly having good receivers helps make a good quarterback. Don't get me wrong, I really like Jaden Payote and I really like Jalen Jones, but they're young freshmen, inexperienced players. So I don't think we, you know, Trey Turner and Tavion better stay healthy this year, right?
So another thing, learning to make the right reads in the read option, where Ryan Willis just never progressed.
Right, exactly. And certainly never progressed there. I don't know why that is. It was at one point that the coaches were actually joking with him and saying, you know, Ryan, whatever you think you should do, you should probably do the opposite.
Yeah.
Right? I still think some of it does go back to wide receiver depth. Like, do you remember, like, in 2007 when Virginia Tech had Eddie Royal, Josh Morgan,
Harper,
and
Clowney?
And
we're forgetting.
I don't know. There was one year where Tech had four NFL receivers. Like Trey Turner's our number one receiver now, and he would have been behind all of those guys, right? So we think of Trey as like a really good player because he's a starter, and he is a good player, but he's not Eddie Royal good or Isaiah Ford good or Josh Morgan good or Justin
or
Harper
Jarrett Bork.
Yeah, exactly. We think of him as good because of his recruiting ranking. He was a highly ranked recruit, right? He was higher ranked than Isaiah Ford, higher ranked than Cam Phillips.
Okay, now wait a minute. You're getting off the rails. You're not answering the question.
I know.
I think we have a couple of good points here. How about this? You're talking about receivers. Let me transition to another question from Zachary Stanfield. He was asking how Coach Jafar Williams and the wide receiver group coming along. We just talked about that earlier, Zach, but he specifically asked, is Changa Hodge progressing?
That's a good question. And
how would we know?
I don't know. I've seen 1 hour of practice. I would think by default, yes, he's going to progress. Because he's the guy got here, he didn't commit to Tech last year. I mean, he was a transfer from Villanova, by the way.
Late in the process.
Very productive.
Like, he found out Villanova wasn't going to play football last year, and he entered the portal. He committed to Tech after Tech's August practices had already begun. He arrives in Blacksburg, and then apparently there was a 10-day COVID protocol that you have to go through or something like that if you're arriving on campus within a program. I don't know. But so he got to practice and couldn't practice, basically. Finally gets to start practicing, and then practice gets shut down because of COVID. And that the season starts, and that dude barely even practiced. Barely got any practice in a brand new offense with brand new terminology and brand new plays. Everything completely different to him. So, yes, I would think by default, going through spring practice and actually learning some intricacies of the offense for the first time, I'm sure he's going to progress. How could he not?
He played in 9 games and caught 3 balls. Yes, I guarantee he'll do better this year.
Now, here's the thing. Like, we talk about, you know, he only caught 3 balls. Evan Fares was a similar guy, a new addition to the program who didn't get to go through spring practice, and he only caught 2 passes. I didn't think he was very good to begin with. I just thought he was basically brought in as a blocking specialist. The wide receiver,
which he was good at.
Yeah, I just didn't think he was not a good athlete and was never going to catch very many passes. Yeah. I think Hodge will be better. How much better? I don't know. I think Burmeister, from what I saw the other day, extremely small one hour sample size. Burmeister he looked a little more smooth than Hooker. More accurate.
He's a darn good runner, too.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
All right, full transparency, folks. I've got to charge my computer last night. I'm on 3% battery, and I don't want to lose these questions, so we're going to go rapid fire here, okay? Want to make sure we get these in. I'm going to give a question to both of you. Let's go like 30 seconds on this.
Right.
Is Keyshawn Artis going to play much? Dax said in an interview that he might consider coming back for another year. Could he split some time with Dax?
Well, first, he's got to be the number 2, Mike. Right? We don't even know if he's number 2 now. I assume he is. Most of that is going to come down to Dax. Mike is considered Dax's most natural position. The one time he got to play Mike, though, this past year against Liberty, was not
his worst game.
One of his worst games. Definitely his rushing game from a rush defense standpoint. Yeah. So I think whether Artis plays any or not, it's more about Dax. Yeah.
Okay. Another question from Zach. Starting units on offense and defense look pretty solid. Who's starting to serve as a backup for Tisdale and Connor?
Oh, yeah. I would expect Nasir Peoples maybe to be the backup whip. That's where he was before when he blew out his knee.
Yeah.
And like I said earlier, they could use a cornerback there in long yardage situations too. Yeah. And who was the other?
Backer.
Backer. You know, well, gosh, I don't know exactly.
I don't have the depth chart in my head. I'm not good at these kind of questions.
I need a roster in front of me. Yep. But I think they're the guy they recruited from Marshall, the transfer.
Right.
If he's eligible, well, you're eligible this year right away.
Yeah.
That's certainly a possibility. The guy, he was a true freshman this past year, played on special teams from the 757. Mm. He was a safety. And now he's a backer. He's 6'4", 215, and he looks like a monster.
You can't remember his name. You can't remember all that stuff. Not Etude. Etude's a freshman this year.
No, Etude's a true freshman this year.
Yeah, I'm blanking too.
I love football questions. Everyone's all fired up here for football. How about this? One more from Jacob Yates while you look that up. Anything positive to report on the recruiting trail for football?
I mean, depends on your definition of positive. My definition of good recruiting doesn't necessarily match up with everybody else's, so I'm not the best guy to ask there.
There's just no news, basically.
Okay.
And I'm sure if he's asking about recruiting, he probably follows this. The crystal balls are all turning for Gunnar Givens to Virginia Tech, and I don't know. There's just not a whole lot going on. You know,
this is going to be a really, really small class. Right now, technically speaking, Virginia Tech only has room for 8 players in this class.
Right.
Because of the everybody gets an extra year and blah, blah, yeah. blah, right? Now, they'll end up signing more than that because of attrition. But if you're expecting this to be a highly ranked class with 8 or 10 players in it, all of them would have to be 5-star or 4-star players for that to happen. The player I was talking about is Lakeem Rudolph.
Right.
Ed Backer. He looks the part. I think highly of Dean Ferguson, too, at Mike. These are all young players, redshirt freshmen and such, though.
Yeah.
One more question on the basketball front. We know Coach Young is targeting a post player. Any insight into the top names we might target? Any shot of the kid from Furman, even though he's more of a 4, not of a true 5?
I haven't.
I have not been looking a ton. I need
my we run so much content these days, and as managing editor, my focus is generally on the articles we write. And then when it comes to recruiting, like, you just see recruiting sites out there. It's their full-time job to know recruits' names. That's not us. My philosophy on recruiting is someone commits, and then I look at them and determine whether I think he's a good player. Tech has offered in football 300-plus guys, right?
Yeah.
And generally, I can't keep up with all that. And then add basketball to it. So generally speaking, like our philosophies are to – unless it's a big name like Gunner Givens, who we know Tech's heavily recruiting him, like, I'm going to focus on Tech's recruits after they commit, after I know who they are.
And most basketball recruits, and this includes transfers, you don't know who's on the board until they announce.
I mean, I knew Jalen Cohn was a top 100 recruit, and Tech was recruiting him heavily. But because he was 5'9", I assumed he was a point guard, and I didn't know he was an elite shooter.
Right.
I didn't know anything about him. I just knew he was a top 100 recruit, right?
Anyway, you know, when you ask us questions like, how's it going with this recruit? How's it going with that recruit? You know, who's on the board? Who are they recruiting? We don't know that.
That's not really what we do.
We don't know that stuff.
Nonetheless, appreciate everybody's questions today. Really some good ones. And it all started with, good morning, I like sandwiches and I like cheese. So I'll always remember this podcast for these comments at the beginning. Chris is the best managing editor in the land. And I know we've got a lot of great content coming up this week, as always. You know, can I just say, we always talk about Brandon Patterson. Like, he's the man. Like, his articles are awesome. So is he sending one in this week?
Yeah, he already sent it in. So that's what I'll be editing and posting this afternoon. Oh, I don't know. Continuing the Tech offense?
Ah, okay.
Yeah. I just know we sent it in. I haven't read it yet.
You see the name and you're like, okay.
Yep, exactly. So we'll have that today. And I forget which position I'm on in order of my, like, spring previews. I think I moved to defense now.
You've done offensive line, right?
Yeah. I think I've done every offensive position.
You've done
position.
Everything, yeah.
Yeah, so moving on to defense now. On that side of the ball.
And I will try to get some pictures out of the weight room and of the Student Athlete Performance Center.
Right.
Will Stewart, the photographer, excuse me. Yeah. Awesome. Well, guys, great show. You know, it's funny. Before the show today, I was looking. I was like, kind of a light show today. Here we are again, an hour and 40 minutes in. So this was great. Great content. Great stuff. And really enjoying talking football again, because that's it's kind of next on the horizon is Virginia Tech football. It's about a couple months away. So, all right, gentlemen, any closing thoughts? Anything else we need to get through?
No, I don't think so. I'm just very excited because the weather's getting good.
Yeah. Thank goodness.
You are not going to see below freezing temperatures again.
Yes, the last cold day of the year was Thursday, the day Virginia Tech, out of all 15 practices, they chose the coldest day of the entire
spring
to open.
In the morning, 8 o'clock.
Yeah. Thanks.
All right, well, that'll wrap things up. Episode 174 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter. We're at Tech Sideline, but Will's on Twitter at Will Stewart TSL. Chris is on Twitter at Chris Coleman TSL, and you can stay up to date with everything going on with Virginia Tech Athletics. TechSideline.com is our website. That'll do it for us. We hope you can join us next Monday here for another edition of the Tech Sideline Podcast. For our managing editor, Chris Coleman, our founder and general manager, Will Stewart, the best podcast produced in the land, behind the scenes, Malcolm Stewart, I'm your podcast host, Evan Hughes, saying so long. Thanks so much for watching and listening to episode 174 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, presented by DraftKings, Anytime Fitness, as well as the Southeast Regional Training Center. Have a great week, Hokies. We'll talk to you next Monday.